Welcome to Living in Hi-Fi. I'm Steve.
And I'm Flissy. This is a podcast about records. Today's album is Guantanamera by the Sandpipers. It's a 1966 release on A&M Records. The catalog number is SP4117, and there's also a mono edition, and that is LP117.
So, this album comes from my collection of A&M Records, which I really got into through Sergio Mendes, who also, as it happens, was my introduction to a number of Brazilian artists. And when he came to the U.S. along with some other bossa nova artists in the late 60s, he released some albums on A&M, starting with the Herb Alpert Presents Sergio Mendes in the Brazil 66. And from there, I moved on to Herb Alpert's records, which are a thrift store mainstay, and we'll probably get to in another episode. But after buying a number of Herb Alpert albums and coming across other occasional A&M releases, I decided I was going to try to collect the entire 1960s A&M catalog, which, amongst other artists, includes the Sandpipers, and I think are pretty representative of the A&M house sound during this period.
Yeah, when I think about this album, I really think of it as a staple of our collection for all the reasons that you just said about how you were attempting to collect all of the records from A&M in the 1960s. So this one is definitely a staple, and just even the cover embodies this very 1960s look. There's this super chubby 1960s typeface that says Guantanamera, the Sandpipers, and the song titles on the cover.
Yeah, so the typeface, I looked into it, and I mean, it's sort of reminiscent of the ubiquitous hobo font. And there's not really very good information about what typeface this is actually, although I guess there is a 2003 digitization of it called Roberta. It was digitized by Ralph M. Unger, but it doesn't really have any credit for what the original typeface was, other than it was sourced from old font catalogs.
So it could definitely have been sourced from this album, maybe?
Perhaps.
I don't know. It does sort of look like that hobo font, which reminds me of like elementary school billboards.
Exactly.
Anyway, on the cover, there's this super 60s lady in a pink caftan among the mangrove trees. It's just very, very 60s. And on the back of the album, there is this super pretentious poem. It looks like an acrostic because it's just like one word per line. The first word is capitalized all the way through, so it is a little bit silly. I'll just read you a little snippet. Music for the tiny hours, melodies for afternoon, and harmonies for any time. Songs for the sad, easy, lazy, softly, sounds, take them or leave them, pleasant, present, notes, without message, from no separate era or source.
Yeah, that's very, very strange, but in a strange way does, I guess, describe what
it totally does. I mean, it is very, this is just a super easy listening album, and it pretty much says that right off the bat. Like, it's for lazy days, it's a little sad, sort of without any origin. It's really like, that's pretty much what's going on here.
So why don't we take a listen to our first clip? We're going to listen to the title track. This is Guantanamera.
Estar sos del alma. Carmen encendido, mi verso es de un verde claro y de un carmín encendido. Mi verso es un cielo querido que busca en el monte amparo.
Okay, so this was my pick from the album, and I think that this is the sort of canonical version of Guantanamera. And what I really like about this and this album in general is sort of the combination of the male vocals with the, I guess as we found out, the anonymous, uncredited female vocals, and sort of the simple orchestration where it's basically just a guitar accompaniment with the vocals in Spanish and, you know, spoken word translation in English. And I don't know. I mean, I think it's just very interesting that it's different, very different from the kind of music that you hear today, that I just don't think you would ever hear an album that was put together this way with just a simple guitar accompaniment. And I don't know. I mean, I've really just always appreciated it. You know, I didn't ever really question the fact that it was sung in Spanish. I didn't really think about it. I just took that for what it was. But as it turns out, I guess nobody involved in the production of this is of Hispanic heritage. Is that right?
That's right. Although there is on the album a credit for a Spanish language consultant.
Yeah, but I guess, you know, I mean, even though I had never questioned the Spanish language on this, I guess I shouldn't have been surprised, because that's really sort of a thing at A&M Records, starting off with Herb Alpert and the Tijuana Brass, where Herb Alpert himself is of Ukrainian and Romanian heritage, and the Tijuana Brass was made up of, I think, Italian and Jewish Americans. And also on A&M Records is the Baja Marimba Band, which sort of played up this stereotypical Mexican image by wearing sombreros and fake mustaches. And I think even at the time it was, you know, somewhat controversial with Mexican-American groups, but I think most Americans in general just sort of accepted it. And I think that goes to the whole American perspective on the rest of the world, where it's just like, you're either America or we don't really care. And I think that that is sort of embodied in the Exotica, which I'm sure we're going to get into in a future episode, where just everything outside of America is all blended together. And I think that that is true of Latin America. And it's just, you know, if this is in Spanish, you know, it could have been from Mexico or Cuba or somewhere in South America. It, you know, it doesn't really matter to people. And it's sort of all just kind of lumped into one sort of place that's outside the U.S.
So I really couldn't figure out what the origin of that was, like why there's so much Spanish language on this album. But I agree with you, like this song is really lovely, and you know, it's, I think it's like definitely part of that 1960s folksy vibe going on. And what I find interesting about that is that this song in particular has a little bit of political history of it. So the poem was originally written in 1891, and it's a Cuban poem. And it was written, the music that accompanies it is written in the style of the field workers. And later in Cuba, there was a radio DJ, and this was his theme song. And he would make up like a whole bunch of different verses for that go along with the tune to speak on, you know, whatever was going on in his episode, like the news of the day, whatever. So that's sort of the history of the original song Guantanamera. And then this song that's on the Sandpipers album is based on a Pete Seeger arrangement. And as we know, Pete Seeger is like this, I would say like a social activist of the folk movement, right? And during a 1963 concert, he performed this song. And this is like during the time of the Cuban Missile Crisis. And so he was trying to get the crowd to sing the song along with him in Spanish as a symbol of unity with the Cuban people. So I found this really interesting that, you know, this song has a little bit of like a political, social edge to it, while the rest of this album is very like just straight up easy listening. And it's sort of incidental that some of the songs are in Spanish. There's also an Italian language song on here. And there's some songs that are sung in English. So it was kind of interesting.
But so anyway, do you want to tell us a little bit more about the Sandpipers?
Sure. So it does indicate on the back cover that the three guys, there's these three guys, Jim Brady, Mike Piano, Richard Schaff, they all met at a boys' choir in school when they were teenagers. And I guess then they were picked up by the guys at A&M.
Yeah, I guess they started it off as the Four Seasons, but as the name the Four Seasons was already in use, they decided to perform as the Grads. And performing as the Grads, they came to the attention of A&M Records. I guess Herb Alpert didn't really like the name the Grads and asked them to change it. And apparently he picked the Sandpipers sort of randomly. And I think that they, you know, they sort of decided to do Spanish language or foreign language versions of songs at the request of their producer, Tommy La Puma.
Right. So then also they have, you'll hear on the album, there's some sort of wordless, airy, ephemeral lady vocals. On this album, I believe the main singer is Pamela Ramsey, and they had anywhere from 2 to 4 other female backup vocalists on tour with them. But unfortunately, those names are mostly lost to history for me. I don't know the names of the ladies that toured with them or that were on other recordings, which I think is unfortunate because while it's these three guys that are the main singers on the album, what really fills out the recording are the lady vocals that have this sort of airy romanticness.
Yeah, and it's a shame that none of them ever got credited on the album, you know, in the album notes at all.
What's the deal with that? I mean, the Spanish language consultant got credited and none of the lady singers got credited?
Yeah, I mean, that's something that I think is really difficult. I mean, some albums you'll see that people go out of their way to credit everybody. I mean, especially in CDs when they had a, you know, a book to go with. But it seems like definitely during the LP era, you know, half the time the main recording artists barely got any credit themselves.
That's true. And we do have some future episodes coming up where we don't know anything about anybody that's on there because literally they're like nobody's named.
Yeah. So why don't we listen to your clip now?
All right, so my pick is off of the B-side. It's the intro track. It's Louie Louie.
Thank you.
All right. So what did you think?
This song is, I think, another quintessential Sandpipers thing. And it's so dirge-like. It's the slowest, most unrockingest version of a rock song, an old classic Louie Louie. And it's just a little bit bizarre, but I just love it. It's just so kitschy.
Yeah, I think that this track really shows how far the Sandpipers could stretch their formula of taking songs and turning them into easy listening ballads.
Yeah, and I think, you know, this song and this whole album, I think, is going to be a really polarizing one, because if you're into like super rockin' tunes, then you're absolutely going to hate everything about this. It's like so slow and weird and folksy and very, very easy listening. But I am super into easy listening, so I approve.
Yeah, and I don't know, one of the things that I like doing about music is sort of I get into one song and I'll try to listen to all kinds of different versions of it and sort of try to discover what is the essence of the song by listening to different people's interpretations of it. And I think one thing that's interesting about this record and is exemplified by this track is that there's a lot of things that through their formula of taking things that are, you know, rock or pop songs and turning them into sort of a ballad, it's almost becomes unrecognizable. And I think it's very easy to listen to this album casually and not even recognize that these are actually popular songs.
Indeed. So what do you think about our copy of this album?
Yeah, I mean, you can't go wrong with A&M Records. They're all really easy to listen to. And yeah, like the rest of A&M, I'm a huge fan. So yeah, I definitely think you should pick this up. I mean, it's something you could probably find at your local thrift store. That's probably where
we probably find many, many copies of it in your thrift store.
Yeah, that's where we likely found our copy. And as such, you know, the record's not in great shape. It's probably been played a lot, you know, probably not treated very well. So there is a lot of surface noise on our copy. But the album sleeve is, you know, it's in fair shape, pretty good shape. And, you know, I definitely think it's one worth picking up. Probably find it for no more than a couple bucks.
Yeah, and I wanted to add that this album was number 13 on the Billboard charts in 1966, which makes this among the less obscure albums in our collection, so it will certainly be easy to find with alongside many other A&M recordings. As we mentioned, Herb Alpert is probably going to be right in the bin right next to this one.
So if you want to learn more about this album, you can visit our show notes at livinginhifi.com/episode/2, and we'll have in there some links to buy or stream the album. And let us know what you think. Contact us on Twitter at livinginhifi or send us an email to feedback@livinginhifi.com.
Make sure to join us next week. We're going to stay in the Latin America region with one of my favorite albums.
Thanks for listening.
Thanks. Bye-bye.